Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, a weekly podcast talk show all about passion, flow, and creativity. So while the topics may change week to week, the heart behind it remains the same. I'm your host, Erin Holman, and my very special guest today is...
everybody's best friend and favorite number two, Davina DeCampo.
Oh my God. Well, Davina, I am so thrilled that you could join us today.
Same. Thank you for having me.
Yes, this is Davina DeCampo of the Telly, superstar, runner-up of Drag Race UK. There's a whole list of credits. One of my favorites is All Together Now. Go ahead and tell our listeners just more about yourself, Davina. Who are you?
I'm a drag queen based in the north of England. But I work all over, have done for forever, you know, internationally, all over the place. I've been really, really lucky to be involved with some amazing projects like All Together Now. I feel like I've been really privileged to have such an interesting career. Mm. You know, I've been able to do really commercial work and then things which are totally off the wall and crazy, and people go, I don't understand what this is about. Mm-hmm. And you need to have like a PhD in performance art to understand what's going on.
You know, that right there, I'm going to go ahead and start things off with one of those more obscure things that I have come across. You did a random acts, and it was based on, I believe, something by Ovid, and it was directed by an Adam Keller. Please,
yes.
I want to unbox that because it blew my mind.
Yeah, this is one of the things which I'm really proud of in my career. It came about, it's so weird how it came about. So I was doing a gig at Heaven in London with GAY, and I'd been doing, you know, I'd just done a show. It was just my generic, it's a Friday night, we all want a bit of a party show. Mm-hmm. It was one of those, you know, but I always throw in a little bit of like coloratura, soprano, classical stuff, just so that people are like, oh, you know, it's a drag show, you know, so they go, oh, this bitch does something else as well. Oh, okay, this is not what I was expecting, but I'm kind of liking it. Oh, you know, so I throw a bit of that in, and there was a composer in the audience, mm-hmm. Vasilis Alvios, who he's like, I do that at the beginning of the set. Like I say at the start of a show like that, you have to kick him in the bollocks. So you go in, you sing a bit of naff something to get them, oh, okay, it's party. And then you go, okay, now this is what I do. And then we can get on and party. So he stayed for the rest of the set. So it was a full hour set.
Wow.
So that he could talk to me. And he was like, I think you're really interesting. I want to work with you. I think you're blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, yeah, okay, great. Here's my email. Because I've had so many of those conversations that if I had done every single project that, you know, people have gone, I want to work with you, I think you're great, blah, 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 then I would never have had a dull moment in my entire life. I wouldn't have slept. So I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever. I didn't think anything was going to come of it. Then they, his boyfriend is Adam Keller, mm-hmm. who runs Sick Finger Studios, which, I mean, they do all kinds of stuff. I must admit, I did not look at what they'd done before. I didn't look at Vasilis's work.
Whoa.
I had no idea what anybody was doing. But they kept turning up to gigs and they kept saying, oh, can we come and see this? The director really wants to see you work and blah, blah, blah. So they came to this big show, but they didn't hang around afterwards. I was doing a set somewhere else after. And I thought, oh, well, that's a bit rude. They've come to this show with loads of RuPaul Drag Race girls in it. And then I thought, oh, they've just come to see the Ru girls.
Yep.
And it was just a sneaky way of them getting in free to watch this show. Well, actually what had happened was they'd watched me and then they'd left. So they didn't even wait for the main act, which was the Ru girls. I was the warm-up girl.
Yeah.
And they just left. So they met me at the venue after, and I was doing another set there. So I was doing a full hour set there. And It was, I mean, for me, vocally, it was a car crash. I missed all of the notes. Like, that's the thing. Sometimes with classical music, if the voice just isn't right, it's just not going to happen. Like, it's, and there's no amount of working, you know, because actually the more you work up here in the throat, you know, the less anything's going to work. So I just missed all of these notes in this. It's called The Laughing Song, which is, what a silly man you are. Anyway, so it's like that. I just screwed the whole thing up. So I was, then when I realized they were there, I was mortally embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, they're going to think I'm absolute.
They're going to have changed their mind.
Yeah, that is exactly what I thought. But they were like, oh, we think you've got really great energy, blah, 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 blah. They went away, applied to Channel 4 for the funding. I'm still thinking this is a joke. I'm still thinking, you know, I don't think this is going to happen. He writes the music. He's like, it's not very hard. It will be very easy. Do not worry. And I was like, okay, great. So he sends me this music. I got half of it. It was so difficult. The second half I got 2 weeks before the recording, and it was even more difficult. My brain was like, ah, I am going to die.
Wow.
So I had 4 days in those 2 weeks where I could really devote to learning this music before I went to London and worked with the orchestra and stuff like that. And even then I was thinking, I mean, this is just, this is some kind of scam. What is going, but I just thought, in for a penny, in for a pound, fine, whatever. Then they buy the tickets for us to go to Bratislava because we're going to film in Bratislava and in Prague.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, still, this is probably like some scam and they're going to harvest my kidneys or something. They're going to sell my internal organs on the black market.
So happy it wasn't that.
I mean, for real. And then when I arrive, that, like, we have access to the Bratislava National Theatre's costume department, the National Theatre. We go to Prague. We film in the place where they first staged Don Giovanni, which, wow, the Prague National Theatre, they never let anybody film in there, ever. They allowed us in to film, and we went in this incredible Renaissance palace. It was just, the whole thing was incredible. Yeah. The whole thing was incredible. A really, really complicated, musically, mm-hmm, very complex, lyrically very complex. And then the ideas within the film itself are really, you know, there's a lot going on.
There is a lot to unpackage there. I was watching it and of course I was blown away by the stellar vocals. Most impressive thing that I've seen a drag queen do probably ever, definitely in my top five. But then to sit and watch, I don't know, the symbolism and the artistic things that were happening in it, I could not look away. It was so good.
Yeah, I mean, Adam and the whole of Sick Finger as a, you know, as a collective, they all work together quite a lot, just have such a clear vision of what it is that they want. And they just, you know, because they're so clear and they work so well together, they know exactly how to put things together to make it work for what they want. I mean, the filming was wild. It was freezing. And by that, I mean, minus 20.
Oh man.
It was freezing. It was so cold. And then the second half of the performance, there's lots of animals in it. It's this sort of queer utopia that you step into. And I'm on top of a staircase coming down. Well, the stairs were on wheels. It wasn't a flat surface.
Wow.
I couldn't see where my feet were going because the dress is so big. There's a peacock attacking the cellist and shitting.
There's the snake.
Like, it was a lot. There was a lot going on. And then they kept releasing these doves. And the doves, like, the ceiling was like 40 foot high. So these doves would just fly up to the ceiling and then just sit in the rafters. And the people who own in these doves are trying to get them back.
Oh, like, my God.
The whole thing was crazy, but just so joyful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how many people get to say that somebody saw them and they decided that they were going to write an aria for you? Like, how many people can say that?
Not a lot. to me yet. And personally, I'm offended it hasn't. This takes us perfectly into one of the main topics of the podcast. I am so interested to hear about this passion for music and where that came from. When did you start singing and where does this range come from?
Okay, so I mean, I don't know when I started singing, but I know that one of my earliest memories at school was in reception, which is the year before year one. Mm-hmm. So you're sort of three. You've just, it's that transition period between going to like a soft play area with lots of tiny kids and school. And the headmaster, when we're in I'm in reception, we're in assembly, the whole school is in assembly, and I don't know, we're singing Morning Has Broken, Morning Has Broken, or something like that. And the headmaster is like, oh, we have a little Pavarotti here with us today, pointing at me. And I mean, I didn't know who Pavarotti was, obviously, I'm three. But I was so, I was puce. I was so red, like bright red, shining. But from then, I was in the choirs. I was in all of the, Christmas shows or the school shows or the school plays or, you know, I was in every choir going. And so that was kind of, you know, that was the thing that I knew out of everybody else. Actually, I'm quite good at this. And like, I'm one of seven. So you have to recognize very early on in your life, what makes me different from these people around me?
Yep, that makes sense.
Because otherwise you're just another one of the brood. You know, you're just a face in the crowd when you're one of seven kids. So yeah, that's where that sort of started for me. Mm-hmm. And then I started learning violin as well when I was at junior school. While I was also going to ballet class and, you know, doing various other things as well. And then I've just been so lucky that I've been kind of in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. So like at high school, when I was 15, we got a new head of music in the department. Maybe I was 14, 15. And he changed all the peripatetic teachers. So all the teachers who come in and teach flute or brass or drums, you know, he changed all of that. And so lots of new people came in. And one of the new people who came in was this lady called Alison Price-Jones, who had been an international soprano. She's one of the founder members of Opera North. Wow. Her husband is the conductor for Opera North. He's like internationally renowned conductor. And she ended up teaching flute and singing in our school.
Wow.
I was like,
yeah, right place, right time.
Exactly. What an incredible opportunity. And she really instilled in me a love of singing classical music, you know, so things that are in different languages and stuff which is, you know, good for your voice.
Yes, I understand exactly what you mean. I myself have a background in performance as well. Musical theater was my bread and butter. But when I went to college and I was, you know, studying some voice privately there, of course, all they wanted me to do was sing about my lover's black hair, you know. And I was having none of it. Now, out of curiosity, you mentioned that you are one of seven. Where do you land in that one of seven?
I am number five. I'm number five in the brood. So, and the funny thing about our family is we're like the Von Trapps, but the other way around, in that there are five boys and two girls rather than five girls and two boys. But all the boys are older than the girls.
Oh, wow.
So it's the four boys are older than me.
Yeah.
And then it's me. And then we get the two girls. So, you know, I think I was just the bit in between.
Yeah.
The male and the female.
Isn't it interesting how those little things that seem like they don't mean anything, you know, you are in the middle for your family. Yeah. And it's quite beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all, you know, we're really, really lucky in that mum particularly has always used a really wide vocabulary. So we all learned lots of, you know, vocab and stuff like that before we went to school. We were already, you know, speaking and doing all of that stuff. And that meant that, you know, my brothers are all really clever. And so that means at home, that's fed into you, that we have these discussions and debates and, you know, everything is about, we're a very debate-y family.
I get it.
And everybody has a different opinion to each other. Nobody agrees on almost anything. So there's, you know, there's always this side and then somebody else chipping in and going, well, actually, it's a bit more complicated than that because, you know, so it's always noisy when we're all together. Very noisy.
Does anybody else in the family sing?
Yeah, absolutely. Both my eldest brothers, Matthew and Guy, have sung in their bands respectively.
Wow.
Both my sisters have been in, you know, same as me, lots of choirs, and always sang in school and stuff like that. And both of them have really lovely voices, but they don't do it as like an occupation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just do it as, so my sisters don't do it as part of, you know, anything extracurricular. It's just they like to sing and they're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us are quite musical, and again, that sort of pushes you on as one of the family to go, okay, he can play the toccata, I should learn how to play that as well. Okay.
Wow.
You know, there's that sort of level of looking up to them whilst also kind of competing.
Yeah. You know, it seems like it has turned into a healthy sort of, you know, competition between your family, pushing you to greater heights, it sounds like.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, you recently came out with your album Decoded, and I would love to hear about the process of creating that and specifically like the song choices.
Mm. So I worked with Killingsworth, who are based in LA, and a songwriter, Ashley Levy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had spoken with Killingsworth about, you know, what the kind of direction that I wanted to go in, and I'd said sort of the people who I like really love are like the Hoosiers,
mm-hmm.
the Darkness, Scissor Sisters, Mika. You know, it's that sort of slightly less left of center.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're not right in the middle.
Nope.
They're not Boyzone. They're not NSYNC. They're, you know, there's something else going on with them. Some of it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, some of it's a bit cheeky, you know, this.
But it is very just good music, always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that was my sort of, this is the sort of stuff that I want to create. I had ideas about the sort of things that I wanted to talk about already. So I said, you know, I'm thinking about this sort of stuff. I'm thinking about this kind of stuff. They went away and created the backing tracks. And then Ashley and I, over Skype,
mm-hmm.
and FaceTime, wrote, I'd written most of the lyrics already, and then she helped me to sort of finesse those, and then she really helped with creating a tune and a melody that made sense, you know. So I'd had like ideas for melodic ideas, but
yeah.
Nothing was, it didn't sit right, and she just helped me kind of batter that out and make it work. It was very much a kind of group,
mm-hmm.
making, with me saying, no, I want it to be more like this or more like that. So all of them, apart from, I would say that on Down With You,
mm-hmm.
Ashley really took the lead with that. She just said to me, look, because we wrote it all in 2 weeks.
Wow.
We did it all in 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
It's just really quick. I mean, thankfully, I came with lots of ideas. You know, I had a massive notebook of ideas for songs and lyrics and stuff that I already sort of had on the burner. Because mm-hmm. it's, you know, writing music isn't something that I've just started. It's something that's been I've been kind of doing bits of it for, you know, the last 15 years. So apart from everything else, you know, Down With You, she really took the lead with it. And she was like, I just kind of wrote this nonsense song, and I was like, I love it. This is actually what I wanted to write. And so with that, all I did was I tweaked a couple of the words in the first verse. I don't think she was saying down with you in, I don't know what she was saying in the chorus, but I don't think she was saying down with you. So I did that, and then I just wrote the second verse. And then she was like, okay, and what else do you want to change? And I was like, yeah, I don't really, actually. I think what you've done is pretty much exactly what I wanted. And she was like, okay, are you sure? You don't want it to? And I was like, no, we've got it. That's it. What we've got is exactly right. And she was really, really good at, you know, I work with another guy as well, Rick, who I've written a couple of tracks with. And you know when a songwriter is really good, because you explain your idea and they kind of climb inside your head and then they just bring it to life and you go, that is exactly what I, yes, that's exactly it. So yeah, it was a really quick, but really interesting process to work in that way. Because normally when I've written stuff, I've kind of written it and then I've gone to the producer rather than the, you know, so I've written the melody, mm-hmm. I've got the ideas for what I want to happen, rather than saying, this is the basic idea, these are the influences, mm-hmm. make something and then give it back to me and then I'll do something with that.
That's a lot of trust.
Yeah, I mean, for real.
I think that the album is very successful. Your recent music video, that was fantastic. I'm excited to see more music from you because, well, I'm assuming that we will be seeing more music.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm working on, you know, I've been working on for the past, I haven't been focused working on, but
it's cooking.
Exactly. That's how I work. So I do my research and then I leave it alone, you know? Wow. And it just cooks away in the back of your head. And then you go, that's the idea. Exactly. And then you can just go, write it down. The melody is kind of half cooked in your head already. So that's not, you know, that doesn't take so long. That's generally how I work with pretty much everything. You know, I worked like that at university when I was writing my essays. I would just read them. Leave it alone for a couple of weeks. Have my sticky notes in all the books.
Where yeah. I'm the same. Absolute same.
Let it cook. And then, you know, just it formulates. Then it allows you the space and the breath to just go, okay, what is it? What is this idea that I'm trying to articulate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's how I like to work. You know, I'd like to do that with my choreography. I like to do it with my writing. I like to do it with composition, everything.
Would you say that you perform better with not just that time and space for it to have cooked, but with some pressure to create? How do you deal with that?
It's like I'm one of those, I need a deadline.
Yes.
I really need a deadline. If I don't have a deadline, then I don't do.
I'm there. Yes, ma'am.
So if I know it needs doing, you know, that was the thing with the diva thing. You know, if I'd just been given this music, because it could have happened at any point, I would have just gone, okay, I'll do half an hour here, I'll do half an hour here, you know, whatever. But because I knew I had these 3 days where I would be at home in Gran Canaria to work on it. Then I had a day in Manchester where I went to see my singing teacher. She was like, how long have you been working on this? And I was like, well, I've had 3 really good days. And she was like, did you sleep? How have you done this in 3 days? And I was like, well, I need to know it, you know. And that's the thing. If you know that you have to have it done by then, you just get on and do it.
Yep.
So I definitely work to a deadline really well, but I will procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is actually the cooking process.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You do your reading and then you have to leave it alone in order for it to really, you know, marinate.
It's hard to explain that to people who don't work that way, though, that what you're doing is your preparation process.
Yeah. My husband, if I'm not doing it right there and then, he does not get it. He's like, why aren't you should be doing this? Why are you not working? And I'm like, I am working. This is like, he likes open plan, that does not work for me because I need to create that idea and then close the door and go away from it. Whereas if the house is open plan, there is nowhere for me to get away from the idea, from the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to do that in order for me to be successful. Mm. Which that's been a real like conversation between us for quite a long time. Like he really wanted us to move into, you know, somewhere that was no walls, everything was really open. And I was like, and he's always like, we should knock down this wall. We should open this up.
Love that.
Get rid of the doors. And I'm like, no, I need different rooms. There have to be different spaces for me to be able to be effective and creative.
I understand completely. Yeah. Seems like your mind is a very active one.
Oh my God. Yeah, for real. Like I'm on. As soon as I'm awake, I'm on. You know, I'm bing, hello, okay, da, da, da. I'm actually kind of more effective really early. Then I have my slump at about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. where if I've been not just mentally working, but physically working, my eyes will be...
Yeah, like, it's closing. That midday. It's that midday
yeah.
group.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but for me, it's a real, like, almost narcolepsy droop, like, really bad. So that, you know, I take a little break and then I'll go back to it. But it's very rare that I'll just sit and relax. I'm trying to get better at it because, you know, I'm nearly 40. You have to take time.
You do. You absolutely do. Now, what does a day in the life of Davina DeCampo look like?
I mean, honestly, at the minute, I'm just playing on the Xbox.
That's great. I love that.
All day today, I've just been like, kill things, kill them all.
I love it.
But then what I'll do is, so last night I started a rewrite that I've been kind of, it's been in my head and I've been meaning to work on it. So like 2 o'clock in the morning, okay, now's the time. Start writing this. And I'll kind of chip away at it and go back and forwards and back and forwards with it. Because I'm very much, I like to plan, cook, deliver. You know, mm-hmm. that's how my process is. I like to plan, do my research, find all the bits out, leave it alone for a little bit, and then... it's just ready then, you know, you kind of know exactly what you're going to do with it.
I find because it's like settled in the body and in the mind, you know, all that research that you've done, it's no longer like over preparation. It is just in there.
Absolutely that. Yeah. There's a really interesting company called Goat Island. I think they're called Goat Island. Mm-hmm. And the kind of ethos of them is, none of that research is ever wasted, whether you use it or not, because it leaves footprints in the work itself. So even though you might not even mention what, I don't know, Owen Jones said about the ruling class, that's going to leave a footprint in the work that you're creating anyway. And so that's, you know, I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I read a lot all the time as well. And that's, a lot of it is newspapers, and I also listen to a lot of talk radio stuff because mm-hmm. I'm very keyed into politics and what's going on in the world and news generally. And that's because I, you know, as an artist, I think your work has to reflect the world that you're living in. And if you're not actually aware of the world that you're living in, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a really important part of creating work as well, is just being aware of what's going on.
So let us go into now another passion of yours, obviously drag. When did this start? When was the first time that you discovered Davina? I understand that it wasn't Davina first, it was a madam?
Yeah, it was Madame Farentina. She talk like this, she's very Italian because she's singing the Italian aria. And
it make a sense, yeah.
Exactly. So the problem with her was nobody could say her name.
Yeah, I was literally about to ask.
Madame Farentina.
Farentina?
Farentina.
Farentina.
Yeah, and that's because, so this is the funny thing. So my singing teacher, Mrs. Price Jones, she, I was in this choir and they used to do residentials and there would be a talent show, like say the course finished on, I don't know, the Saturday, there would be a talent show 2 days before. So you would, you know, kids would bring a piece that they play on piano or something that they're working on song-wise or a song that they've written or, you know, whatever. But there was always a play. Me and my mate Jenny would always do a ridiculous dance. you know, it was just stupid. But I did the cat duet with her. Mm-hmm. And she introduced me on stage as Madame Farachina.
There we go.
And that's where it was. And that was kind of the start of me thinking about doing drag as a form of performance. Mm. Because up until that point, I'd just been singing or acting or dancing or doing all three. You know, I'd always been performing, but never seriously looking at gender as a performative act as well.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the start of that. And that would have been while I was still at university. And it just really, it was one of those things that really stuck with me. And I was reading about gender politics at university and I was doing kind of performance as, gender as performance in parts of my work at university as well. But really in terms of me starting to do drag and think of it as drag, because I've been going to costume parties always as a girl forever, always. Because mm-hmm. I mean, girls, superheroes, girl characters.
And the clothing.
Just, I mean, for real, everything is just better. Everything is just better.
Agreed.
So it was after that, my now husband, mm-hmm. I met him the last 3 weeks of university. I shouldn't have been at university. I had a chest infection. So they they gave me an extension on my final recital for my singing recital. They gave me a 2 week extension. Oh. So I was there for those last 3 weeks and I shouldn't have been. And that's when I met him. Yeah. And there's loads of other weird like coincidences. Like he moved back from Australia to the UK the year that I was born. I'd been going to his nightclub the whole time I was at university, never once seen him. I was seeing somebody else who I never, ever, ever would have been interested in ordinary circumstances, and he saw us across a car park, called him over. My first toy as a child was a kangaroo, mm-hmm. bearing in mind that he is Australian. And, you know, there's just loads of stuff like that. You know, and I do believe that there are certain sort of markers in your life
yes.
that are supposed to happen.
Yes.
They might not, you know, depending on the choices that you make in between, your pathway to those markers might be different, but that will happen at, you know, certain
points. If it's meant to be, it will be. Now, exactly. You being ready for when that opportunity comes, that's a different...
Very much that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much that. So he said to me, because I was working in Wales, he's based in Stoke-on-Trent, it's a two-hour drive. I'm earning pennies at this point, trying to pay off my student loan and the credit card and, you know, all of that stuff. He was like, look, you can sing, you can dance, you can act. Sometimes you're funny. Yeah. Why don't you think about doing drag? And up until this point, I'd been really kind of not anti-drag, but like not interested in it in a kind of pub setting, because a lot of what I'd seen had just been shit. Like, honestly, fair. Just rubbish. Not funny, not clever, not beautiful. Just, like, a big guy
yep.
in a crap wig.
Yep.
Putting blue eyeshadow, red lips, and a sequin dress from Thailand. And that was kind of, you know, what I knew drag to be. Mm-hmm. Just this, a bit naff. And kind of seedy as well, you know. And when I started, that was very much the sort of pertaining idea that everybody had of drag, you yeah. know, that it was a bit seedy and a bit naff, you know, it was yep. just not very good. And so I was a bit reluctant to start with, but then I've always been one for doing things my own way. So, you know, I looked at what everybody else was doing and I thought, I don't think that's not really what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So like one of the first times that I did drag, I did like this big green eye on this side and then did all like weird colors down this side and like smudged it all of my, you know. And then the very first time I did drag and I thought, ah, this is it. Like I said, I was working in Wales. The people who I was working with and for were running this sort of arts collective thing at the time. And they said, look, come and do something. So I thought, okay, I've got this idea for a drag number that I want to do. And it's not going to work in a pub. It's just not. Nobody's going to buy that. So I'll have a go here. So I sang some Lieder. I sang this song called Wiedmung, which is German. And it's, Du meine Seele, du mein Herz. But I did, Du meine Seele,
du mein Herz. Take the optional up.
And I kept saying to them, like, the pianist really needs the music. It's really hard.
Yeah.
No. She'll be great. She'll be absolutely fine. Don't worry. She's a brilliant pianist. And I was like, no, like, this is really, the music is really hard. My singing teacher, who is a really accomplished pianist as well, it took her weeks and weeks and weeks of practice to get it. Like, it's hard. You know, it goes right from the bottom. Bum, 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 bum. It's a hard. And they were like, no, she'll be fine. Well, of course, when she turned up, she was not fine. She could not play this piece. And so I was like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do this like a Morecambe and Wise sketch, and you're going to be a terrible pianist and I'm going to be a real diva about it. Okay. And that's how we're going to make this shit fly.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Because otherwise I'm not doing this. So I borrowed a blue cocktail frock. I borrowed a feather headdress. I was driving this car that was really unreliable. So after the show, it was freezing cold. I think it was like a November or something. So it's freezing cold. And I had to bump start my car down the hill after I'd finished. But so that was basically my kind of intro into drag. And it was in this little town called Battersea Coed, which is in North Wales. It's a little mining village. There's one road that runs through it.
Heavens.
A river and this hall and then some shops. Like, yeah. You know, there's almost nothing there. It's right at the foot of Snowdonia. Mm-hmm. It's stunning. It's gorgeous. But it's very much North Wales. So that was my kind of intro into drag and thinking, actually, there's something in this. Mm-hmm. There's something interesting in what's going on here. And I'd like to explore that a bit further. And that's pretty much what I did. But I was really dog shit terrible for the first 2 years. Like, absolutely horrendous.
I think you're supposed to be for that time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some of it was that the people who were around me, their level of drag was very, very low. They were really not great. So if there isn't something to look at and go, that's interesting, I'm interested in that, or that's amazing, or, you know, if there isn't that, and I mean, I didn't have any sewing skills, my makeup skills are still not what they should be, you know, so I was starting right at the beginning. I had the performance side of stuff down, but I didn't have any of the rest of it at all. So, so for at least 2 years, I looked horrendous. I mean, it wasn't the last time I looked horrendous, but I looked really horrendous.
Super good. So how long have you been performing and been with the character of Davina now? And how different is Davina from Owen?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I've been working as Davina de Campo for, I think, about 8 years now, maybe a bit longer. I feel like it was 2009. So maybe it's 10 years. Maybe I've been working as Davina for 10 years. The question of like how close to me is she and how close to how different she is, I describe it as a magnification of my personality. You know, so Davina is the kind of good time girl. She'll have a sly dig about politics. She'll say some shit about religion, and then she'll sing you a song by ABBA.
Perfect.
You know, so it's very much more about partying, and because I've been working predominantly in commercial settings, mm-hmm. you know. So it's not that she won't step out of that and do other things, you know, like I did a theatre piece called Dancing Bear, which specifically deals with gender, sexuality and religion, like putting all that on stage and then full frontal nudity and violence and, you know, so definitely stepping out of that and creating other work as well. But you've got to pay your bills. So.
Yeah.
Go and do work that pays your bills mm-hmm. whilst supporting making other work as well at the same time. And that's what I've tried really hard to do through my career is because my background, my degree is contemporary arts, you know, so it's people rolling around in jam and
yeah.
talking about insane asylums. So
all while singing ABBA.
exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, so the commercial side of stuff has always been to support making other work as well at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it has very much kind of run concurrently with each other. I think the reason why I've made the sort of decision for Davina to be closer to Owen than further away mm-hmm. was probably a bit informed by Madame Farachina. The fact that she was so totally different. There was nothing about Owen in there at all. It's complete, you know, so because that was so different and really... in a commercial setting
yeah.
with a pub audience who at 7:30 at night are pissed out of their brains, just didn't work. So I think that's why I've ended up there, which is very different, really, when you look at British drag and the big names in British drag. They've always been a very clear-cut character. Mm. You know, like Danny LaRue was a very specific character. He delivered very specific kind of humor. Lily Savage, exactly the same. And now Mrs. Brown's boys, like mm-hmm. Mrs. Brown is a very clear character. There is no question that this is a character.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, what I'm doing is slightly different. But I think that's because I'm also doing something slightly different in terms of how I'm doing drag. So my drag is not about a caricature of a woman. It's about more caricaturing what society says that you should do if you are a woman, you know, highlighting that this is ridiculous. None of this makes any sense. It's clothing, it's makeup. It doesn't have a gender. That is not real. That's something that we made up.
Self-imposed nonsense, honestly.
Yeah.
I look Absolutely. Forward to the day that gender is something that, you know, doesn't become an assumed thing, nor is it required to even discuss. And I do believe that day will be coming. Before we move on to the final section of things, I would love to get a little bit of insight. You are beginning your own podcast. I believe it's coming out in 2 days' time. Fierce Slay Talk. Tell me what you can.
So one of the things which I've always tried to do in my career is work collectively with people. So it's always been, which was part of why I had a really rocky start to drag. The environment that I went into was really not supportive. It was people who were established. They didn't want anybody coming in on their turf. They didn't want new and upcoming people.
Rude.
They didn't feel like there was enough space, which, I mean, maybe there wasn't because they all stopped working. Sorry about it.
Gotta pay them bills.
Sorry, girls. So the first kind of 2-3 years were really difficult for me because there wasn't that support network. So after we moved from the club that we were working in, which was called The Club, I mean, there was a lot of thought went into that name. After we moved from there to we called it The Factory then.
My God.
I mean, for real. It's, I think
Meet me at the bakery.
I mean, for real. My husband was a bit obsessed with Deal or No Deal. Mm-hmm. And the guy called it the Dream Factory all the time. Welcome to the Dream Factory. Noel Edmonds called it the Dream Factory. So I think Paul was just like, I'll call it the factory.
It's so simple. Of course it's going to work. Of course it will work.
So we moved there and I worked really hard to create a community of performers who were on a kind of rota for the Saturdays, and then we would do charity events and bring in new performers and then offer opportunities for people to test stuff out, try their hand at this, do that. And like I did a couple of drag schools there where I would kind of teach people about how you create a number or how you think about, you know, what your look is going to be. And so I've always been about kind of passing on that stuff. And so this podcast is, again, about lifting other people up. So I'm just exactly the same as everybody else, but I've been on a TV show.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So for me, if I can kind of lift some other people up at the same time and give them a bit more exposure, then why would I not do that? Especially people who are working in the scene week in, week out, doing great things and don't necessarily get the acknowledgement that they deserve. Well, why wouldn't I do that? So there's some queens on there who I've known forever. There's some Drag Race girls. And then there's also other queens like Danny Beard, who runs their own podcast, Gossip Gaze, with Billy. Mm-hmm. Danny was on Britain's Got Talent, and we've done shows together before. And it's finding out about their journey, because everybody's journey into drag is so different. Mm-hmm. It's finding about their kind of journey, their ethos, their ideas, and how they approach their work. Mm-hmm. So it's just a kind of an introducing. It's almost, you know, it's like that BBC introducing.
Yes. And this is who they are.
It's the DDC introducing stage.
Oh my God. I love it. I, for one, am very much so looking forward to Fiercely Talk. A lot of what you just said about why you are doing that is the reason I do this podcast. You know, it is because I believe that everybody has a unique story and every single story is worth hearing for the mere fact alone that you can learn something. Now, before we move into the absolute final section, I have collected some questions from the lovely audience out there with us today. And so we're just going to blast through maybe five of these. And, you know, you can keep them short, you can keep them sweet, or you can go in length. It's your call.
Okay.
All right. So our first Q&A comes from a Max Schlenker. Who are some queens you would love to see on season 2 of Drag Race UK?
Oh, gosh. I mean, this is such a hard question because there are so many.
Of course.
You know, there are just the UK particularly. I think because of the way that our scene operates, that you have to, like most of us, the way that you work is you get up for 45 minutes, you entertain a crowd. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that kind of realm of stuff, you have to be able to deliver. So there are just so many amazing queens out there that I would love to see. I'd really like to see a proper old school queen. Mm. Somebody like Roxy Hart, who works at New York in Manchester, or Belinda Scandal, or, you know, who she would never ever do it. She would, because she's famous in her own right. But somebody like Betty Legs Diamond, who had already done the Royal Variety numerous times, is a genuine star in the UK. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to see her, but I wouldn't want her to be competing. I would want her to come in
as a judge,
like the choreography, or as a guest judge. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be something that I would really like to see for UK Drag Race, is using and uplifting some of those people
established
who are already established and are really major names in our industry, and lifting those up as well. That's what I would like to see.
Absolutely. This next question comes from Sarah H. Who are your musical and theatrical inspirations?
Oh my God. Okay. So musically, my My tastes are kind of Tori Amos, Kate Bush, the Pierces.
Oh, wow.
Hoosiers, you know, those kind of people, Bjork. And then the person who, I'm trying to think of her name right now. Oh, my goodness. Pina Bausch. I mean, like, Pina Bausch, Martha Graham, those kind of people who just completely against everything that they've been taught and really off the wall, you know. So the more kind of bonkers it is, the better. Somebody who was kind of really pushing the boundaries of acceptability and looking at gender and sexuality, Javier de Frutos. Mm-hmm. Amazing work. And then, oh my God, just so many. There's so many.
Well, I think that touches on quite a few of them. Our next one comes from a Taylor Davies. And this one actually includes a message to you as well. I follow you on social media, and I see that you are a big advocate for speaking up when you see injustice and discrimination that people are facing. Is there a cause or story that you think needs more publicity, and what can we do to tackle the issue? Thank you for trying to make the world a better place. Again, that comes from Taylor Davies.
Yeah, I think what's happening in Yemen right now is the biggest global issue right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that and the Uyghur Muslims in China, the fact that nobody's, you know, it's getting the tiniest amount of media scrutiny.
Yeah.
Is just, I mean, we're talking instead about Cummings driving and testing his eyesight, which should be a non-story. He should have just been sacked for it. Like, that should have, yeah. If we were in normal times and we were living under a normal regime, that's just what would have happened. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, we're supplying arms to regimes that are creating these problems, particularly Saudi Arabia, in terms of Yemen, and none of it is being scrutinized properly. Yeah. You know, we should be really talking about this stuff and saying, hold on a minute, all of this other stuff is just bluster and a gumph. This is stuff that really matters. We are talking about thousands and thousands of people's lives that our foreign policy is putting in danger. What the hell is that about? And then in terms of China, I don't know. I have no idea what the answer is there, because China is such a massive power.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go with that. I mean, I'm not a politician, so.
Of course, of course.
I'm a drag queen. I kick my lollies around and sing ABBA.
But you know what? During all times, bringing levity and being able to bring some humor to things is very worthwhile, because, I mean, with the state of the world in so many different facets, here in America, it is insane. You know, I wake up every day to a new stress. And
which is part of the technique. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I think through lockdown, you know, everybody's saying we've gone from banana bread to revolution. And that's because for most of us, when you're on that treadmill,
yes,
and you're just trying to keep your head above water, there is no time to think about any of this stuff. Whereas actually, we've had 3 months to sit and go, this system does not work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me. I am miserable.
Same.
I hate this. So, and that's why I think so many people have gone, have become much more vocal and much more visible in their speaking up already. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement is just a small part of that. I don't think 6 months ago you would have had the turnout that you've had for it, because people were just so busy.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, modern life is really destructive to people's well-being.
Yeah.
And I think the sooner we talk about that, the sooner we can all then start looking at the bigger problems, which are things going on in China and Yemen and other places like that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. It is together and by coming together that these things can change. But it does take us focusing on it and getting uncomfortable and being willing to.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have two more questions from the audience. One, who from the cast did you bond with most during or after the show? Of course, being RuPaul's Drag Race UK.
Yeah. I I mean, I love them all. All for, you know, slightly different reasons. I feel like Crystal and I are quite similar in a lot of ways. You know, we're quite cerebral about the way that we approach work and drag. But the way that we do it is quite different to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, so as people and the way that we interact with the world, we're quite kind of in our heads about it. But then the way that that manifests itself in our work is very different. Mm-hmm. Blue is just like, just this cutest little baby.
Yeah.
Who is an evil witch. She's evil. I love that. And I loved how ready she was to say those things to somebody she'd never met, you know, calling me grandmummy.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
You know, I think that's a very Irish thing. I have a very dear friend, Connie, who is in Belfast. And that's just kind of the humor. It's very cutthroat, very to the point. And as long as they can say it in that accent, it's adorable somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, she's like the Milky Bar kid in a dress. Yeah. So you can't help but love her. Bag of Chips, I absolutely adore. She is one of the sweetest, nicest, funniest, most unconcentrated people I've ever met.
You know, I watched a live. I got on Instagram Live a couple nights ago, and it had to have been 2, 3 a.m. Her time. And she was up watching projections of Dolly Parton music videos, absolutely blitzed out of her mind. And I loved it. I sat there for 30 minutes and watched because I was like, this is fun and I want to be there.
She is just great fun.
Yeah.
It's like herding cats with her. Mm-hmm. You know, don't expect her to turn up time. Don't expect her to do what has been asked. But she will turn up and she will deliver. Mm-hmm. It just will be late.
Mm-hmm. Hey, as long as it's good, I'm happy with it.
And I feel like we were really, really lucky with our cast. You know, there are of course, disagreements with drag queens. That will happen. Not everybody is going to be on the same page as each other.
And it's fine that they're not.
Human life. Exactly. But 99.9% of the time, we all get along absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and genuinely really enjoy each other's company.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic to hear. And then our final question from the audience comes from Jeanette. Would you do an international All-Stars if you were asked?
Oh my God, imagine. I mean,
I can imagine.
If I was running wild, that would be what I would want to be doing. That would be what, you know, my eyes would be on that prize of, okay, we're going to do Australia, Canada, the UK, Thailand, and America.
Oh my Lord.
That's what I think I would be trying to do.
It would be intense.
Oh my God.
It would be so intense.
And Drag Race is intense, full stop. Putting it on that level would be insane.
Yeah.
But I think it would be so much fun. I think that would be so much fun.
You know, I have found out that there have been 40 seasons of Drag Race, you know, across all of the different ones. There have been 40.
That's insane.
You know, and to think if you could pull queens from any of those, it could be explosive.
It would be insane.
Yes. Well, we are going to move into our final section of things, a section I like to call Passions Lately. Oh. Quite simply, Davina, what are you passionate about lately?
I mean, I'm generally really passionate about politics. So that's not like a specifically right now thing.
Yep.
What I'm really focusing on at the moment for myself is developing new stuff and engendering my skills, making them better, you know, so developing skills further. So I'm working really hard on wigs.
Nice.
I am not known for my wig skills. So I'm watching lots of tutorials and trying to improve that side of stuff for me. And then also makeup. Like, makeup has never been a focus of my drag. It's been something that I do, you know. So I'm a drag artist and I use makeup, you know. Whereas now I'm trying to develop those skills and look at how to just make it better. I'm always trying to make everything better anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's been a major sort of passion for me my entire career, is just, okay, that was good. How could it be better?
Mm-hmm.
That was great, but how could that be better? And sometimes that means that you eat away at yourself a bit too much and you have to go, okay, it is what it is. You know, that the older I've got, the better I've become at that, at going, sometimes it just is what it is. You know, nothing is ever ready as an artist. Nothing is ever.
It's never perfect.
I mean, you could go back to it and back to it and back to it. And at some stage you have to go, this is what it is. This is what it is. And just let it out into the world. But definitely makeup, I'm trying to develop those skills more. And I'm really passionate at the moment about, I do a lot of retweeting because it is about, it's not just about my voice, you know, so particularly with Black Lives, or the trans community, I will retweet other people's stuff. Maybe I'll comment, but I will retweet rather than say, this is how it is, blah, 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 blah. Because actually, I don't have those experiences. So I'm not coming from an informed position, whereas this person is. So maybe I should listen to them and what their lived experience is.
I respect that.
And and so I'm, you know, I'm trying to be very, trying to be as responsible with the platform that I've got as I possibly can be, so that I'm not, you know, making pronouncements and declarations on behalf of people. And instead I'm just trying to elevate that voice instead.
We love a conscientious queen. Absolutely. So thank you for that, for amplifying voices that have not maybe received the same platform. It's a brilliant way to use what you have gotten. My passion lately, I have been very obsessed with an artist, Leon LaJavis. She just released her third studio album. It's self-titled, Leon LaJavis. It is some of the most soulful and hypnotic music I have ever heard. But when I tell you, it just brings me to a place of joy. Her voice has the most amazing, fluidity to it that is so enjoyable. She did a live stream of the new album very recently. And, you know, I watched it here in America at 6 p.m., but you know, she lives over in the UK. And so she was choosing to perform for us, you know, at 2 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
And what a generous gift both that was, that live stream, which was just unbelievable. And then this album, I can't recommend enough to check out Leon LaJavis's new album.
Great. I will definitely have a look at that.
One final question for the pod before we go. What's the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy?
Oh, okay. Actually, it happened today. I found out that I have been shortlisted for the National Diversity Awards in the UK.
No! Wow.
What the?
Davina. Oh, that's huge. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Like, genuinely, there's very few things in life that you kind of, that happen that you think would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them, you know, just being shortlisted. I mean, there's people like Ollie Alexander, Sam Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people with millions and millions and millions of followers. And somehow I've.
Yeah.
Ended up on the same list, so I'm very, very happy about that today. Yeah, that's that was a real joy for me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Eye to Eye.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, listeners, for being here with us. And go outside; we'll be here and gayer when you get back. This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.